Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the New Mainstream podcast, where we explore the impact of multicultural consumers on marketing and media. I'm your host, Mario Carrasco, and co-founder of Think Now. Excited to introduce our guest today, Tanya Diaz-Goldsmith, Director of Talent Development and Diversity at Related Companies. Welcome, Tanya.
Hi, Mario. Thank you so much. Happy to be here.
So excited to jump in. But before we get into a little bit about your background, I would love for you to tell the listeners and myself a little bit about Related Companies and the work you all do. It was great for me to do some research prior to see everything that you're doing at Related Companies, but would love to hear, you know, from your perspective, what y'all are involved in.
Yeah, it's a great question. So Related Companies is one of the largest real estate developers. We were founded 50 plus years ago. We have a $60 billion real estate portfolio. One of our landmark projects is Hudson Yards on Manhattan's West Side. Largest real estate development in U.S. history. So we have a lot of great and exciting things going on constantly at Related Companies. And something really interesting is that we're a vertically integrated company, which means we do everything from A to Z when it comes to the development of a project. So that's everything from site acquisition to design and construction and portfolio management. But our biggest asset class is actually affordable housing with over 50,000 units nationwide.
That's incredible. Hudson Yards, just iconic. And I was excited to speak to you because we have lots of diversity, professionals, and you're on the talent side of things as well. But when it comes to communities, like talent diversity, that's just so critical, right? And so curious, like how DE&I is intertwined with some of these projects that you all are doing at Related.
It is, to your point, very intertwined. You know, we really pride ourselves on having a bold and fearless energy that contributes to our entrepreneurial culture, which drives everything we do. And that really means having a focus on innovation. That is how we've been successful. That is definitely a big part of our competitive advantage. And the biggest driver of innovation, simply put, is diversity of thought. So my team and I work really hard to maintain that within our company and maintain, an environment where diverse thought is not only encouraged, but rewarded. And so I think in my role, I lead our DEI efforts, which means providing strategic leadership and overseeing the implementation of a variety of initiatives, both internally and externally. But it is all with the end goal of making sure that we're fostering an environment where we are encouraging and making the best fertile grounds type of environment for ideation, innovation, and ultimately inclusion, because that's how we get to those things, right? And at the end of the day, I think we really, what we get out of that is that we are trying to build communities that are as diverse as the community we're building internally for employees. And it's a give and take, right? Because we cannot serve our communities and keep building these cities that redefine sophisticated urban living, which is something we love to say, and we pride ourselves on making these spaces where people can work, live, and play. We need diversity of thought in order to continue to do that in the most productive and successful way.
I love that you're anchoring it to innovation. That I think you're one of the first people to mention that. Like, we all know how important diversity is across a variety of metrics, right, in terms of business success. But that innovation part, to me, I agree with you, is like one of the most important, right? Like, having that diversity of thought, especially as it relates to building communities, is so critical for innovation. and for you all to keep growing, which is great. And we jumped right in. I wanted to talk to a little bit about like your role. So it's like it's talent development and diversity. Are those kind of two separate functions? Because like I've had people on that have two hats on, right? Like they lead head of marketing and head of D&I. Right. I mean, is that how your role is set up? It's talent development and D&I, or are they intertwined?
I would say they're very much intertwined. I sit within the learning and development department within related companies. So on one hand, we really take a holistic, people-centric approach when we're thinking about how to foster diversity, in that while we celebrate differences, and speaking personally, people of color and underrepresented groups need specially tailored programs in order to build equity, right? That's, you know, no surprise. At the same time, we have a shared humanity. We all have things that are just integral to our growth and our development as humans. And so really this talent development piece, while it's for the whole company and it's for everyone, really taking that piece when we're thinking about underrepresented populations and how to increase diversity, we have to think of that in more specific terms. So I'm not sure that answers your question, but I think
no,
that
it does.
Good. You know, these are one of the things that makes so much sense in my head, but articulating it is sometimes challenging, because I think that a lot of my work in talent development, for example, employee feedback and employee recognition programs are applicable writ large to everyone. But when we're thinking about how to tailor these programs to specifically amplify Black and Brown voices and other marginalized voices, they take on a little bit of a different angle, because we're trying to really hit the mark with these specific populations. So that's kind of where I see the overlap. And sometimes it is wholly specifically geared towards underrepresented populations and not so much towards the general population.
I want to dig into something you said that's like, I feel like it's really important, and it reminds me of like my entrepreneurial journey in the market research space. It's like getting diverse talent is, and I don't want to diminish it, but it's like kind of the easiest step in getting diversity into a company.
Yes.
What I've found that's difficult is like, you know, market research, for example, is just not diverse. And so we make an effort to get diverse talent, but we realize, you know, that because there hasn't been a diversity pipeline in market research, you know, the knowledge base isn't there. And so we need to create programs internally here to get people up to speed. Is that kind of how you're thinking in terms of, you know, at related companies, right? Like you talked about that equity function, like setting up programs, systems, you know, classes to get people up to speed, right? Because of the inequities that exist. Yes. Outside of the companies.
Yes, absolutely. I wholeheartedly agree with you. And I understand, you know, the ambivalence behind diminishing the work, but it's definitely not. I think you're absolutely right. At the end of the day, you know, I think that diversity is a stats game. So, you know, it's a numbers game, it's a stats game. But how are you keeping folks in the door once they're there, I think, is the bigger question. And you can't call an environment inclusive, and you can't call it equity, if you're inviting people into a space that you're unwilling to change. And so using inclusion as a driver of retention is really important. And how are we doing that? A lot of companies have moved the needle on their recruitment efforts, but are there inclusion efforts there? And I think that's something that we're really focused on, especially for 2023. It's one of the things that I'm most proud of working on in 2022, is seeing a significant increase in our diversity numbers and an employee sentiment using our engagement survey as a tool, we've seen a significant evolution, and we really think that it could be tied to our inclusion programs. You know, certainly, what's the stats phrase? Correlation isn't causation. So it's possible. Maybe we got lucky, you know, but I don't think so. I talk to a lot of people up and down and across the organization, and we're hearing it again and again. I feel more included. I feel more seen, heard, and valued. I love what you all did for Black History Month. I loved volunteering at XYZ organization. I loved that we had a day dedicated just to that. You know, one of the most touching and inspiring comments I've gotten this year from an employee is, I've been here for 15 years and I feel more included today than ever. Wow. I can't believe how Related's really stepping up their game. I mean, I've heard this coming from, and you know, directly from an employee on the ground. And that is really inspiring for us. That really gives us a good indicator that we're on the right path. So I encourage anyone working in the space, and I ask myself this every day, how are we stepping up our inclusion game?
I love that, because I think that's also forgotten too, right? We tend to think about new talent and moving the numbers forward. We often forget about that person that's been there for 15 years. You know, maybe, yeah, their productivity is fine, but who knows where that person or people could get if you stepped it up, right? It's about the talent you have now, not even that new talent that you have. So that's a great point. And I'm curious, like on a high level, would love to hear, like, what are some of these, the programs that you're, that you set up that you're most proud of from a talent development standpoint?
Well, I mean, I can speak about this for hours, but I will give you some quick ones. So one is we rolled out a behavioral-based leadership training program where we trained over 400 managers nationwide. And it's very practical. Our goal was you walk out of that room and you have tools in your toolkit that you can apply immediately to up your inclusion game. So I've heard a lot in just reading and the media, you probably heard this too, around, you know, that it's difficult to change hearts and minds. That's what we want to do. We want to change hearts and minds, but that's really difficult, challenging at best, and sometimes impossible. You know, these are deeply ingrained beliefs and biases that we all have. And so I've been hearing this notion around, or this approach or thought, that maybe we should be trying to change behaviors. And that's what this training program is essentially doing. We're saying, hey, your employees walk in, look up from your phone, say hello, say good morning. Just recognize the person. You know, that's a very simple example, but it's those small changes that can really add up to a difference in culture, atmosphere, environment. So that's something that I am proud of, and I'm proud to have worked on that with my team. I think we all felt that moved the needle, because while we're not, again, changing hearts and minds, perhaps, maybe we are, we're at least fostering inclusion, you know, in a very tangible way. So that is, I think, probably the top one. And another one, close second, is our mentorship program that really was targeted towards high-performing, high-potential, underrepresented populations. So going back to this idea of making it a tailored program that assesses and addresses the needs of that specific population, not just a general program that, you know, maybe checks the box. No shade, because mentorship is always good in any regard, I think. But, you know, speaking as a person of color myself, I needed something very different in my career. When I was mid-career, that's what this program was for. I feel like I needed something very different than some of my colleagues or friends that came from more advantaged upbringings or from a more advantaged population or socioeconomic class. So really trying to address the issues directly of what do you need to succeed specifically. And we did that with this program. We had a small cohort of 13. So that enabled us to be really high touch and really take a super bespoke approach to this and check in with them constantly and be supportive and even provide an orientation that was almost a full workday around how to be not just engaging, but be engaged, how to go in prepared to build a rapport with a mentor, how to build organic relationship building skills. So I think it was really successful, and the feedback we got after the program showed that people were significantly more confident in their ability to build relationships across the organization after having completed that program.
I love that. Yeah. And I have been reading more about behavior versus changing hearts and mind. I think that's so important. And I feel like that's something that's been gaining steam the past 6 months to a year, right? Because we saw a lot of, lack of better word, right? After the events of 2020 with the murder of George Floyd, we saw a lot of performative DE&I.
Yes.
That was like, we're bringing DE&I in, and it's speeches to let people know what's going on. But at the end of the day, you know, how are you functionally changing the work environment? I think it's great to hear that you're implementing some of these behavior changes. Cause I think about, you know, I don't know, like fitness, right? Like, no one wants to work out. But you can't change how you feel about that in the morning. But if you just put the alarm on and say, go,
right.
You're going to get up and go. And I think that's similar, right? I mean, with behavior change, it's just like something that you should be doing. And maybe eventually hearts and mind will come, but getting that muscle memory is so important. And I'm starting to read the research. I think that's the way of the future in terms of DE&I. And I agree with you on the mentorship front. Mentorship is so different for each individual and community, that, you know, personalizing that for everybody's experiences is critical.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I love your analogy with fitness. You know, it brings to mind a very, current example in my life that with much shame, I admit that to this day, I am not a morning person. And I read, okay, good. Thank you. So I feel less embarrassed now about that. I mean, I have a child, I've been working for decades, and I still can't get the hang of it. And I read somewhere, it was a commentary on Atomic Habits, I think it's James Clear, his book. And they said something so simple, but brilliant. They said this person, the writer, sets their alarm clock for 5 a.m., gets up and says, I hate this, but you know what? You don't have to like it. You just have to do it. And that was like mind blown for me, because I'm like, okay, now if I get up and I'm really grumpy and I hate my life for a couple of hours, that's okay. I just have to do it. And so, you know, I hope it's a little bit different when we're talking about DEI behaviors, because I hope people don't hate treating other people with respect and equality and equity. But it says something, right, to your point around how behaviors can be the catalyst for changing hearts and minds, hopefully. And at minimum, at least we're treating each other more fairly, even if the hearts and minds part does not follow, which again, I hope that's not the case, of course. So I love your analogy, and I think I'll take that one with me around the fitness parallel there.
and it's funny because I did exactly that, by the way. It's the past almost 10 years now since my daughter's born, I 5 a.m. and working out, and You know, you see all this content of people that love it. And I still, you know, it's been 10 years and it's not, it doesn't get easier, but it's, you know I feel good at the end of the day, and that's that. You know, and you mentioned a little bit on the mentorship side, you know, about you, and you had mentorship. I would love to dig in a little bit about your background. I mean, your resume is impressive. You've worked at some iconic organizations like YMCA. How did you, you know, tell us a little bit about your career journey. How did you end up at Related?
Yeah, I have a pretty interesting career journey. I've always been interested in, while I couldn't articulate this at the time, so not trying to imply I was like 11 saying these words, but looking back, I've always been interested in the overlap of psychology and business and how factors dictate, really, I was about to say affect, but really dictate how we relate to the world around us. Always interested in that, and always trying to find a way to do, you know, my parents were probably pretty worried about me as a kid. I would do these like observational research studies, which again, I can articulate that now. At the time, it felt like I was just a weird kid. So just looking at how people react to things because they're, you know, a certain age or they're from a certain neighborhood. I had a unique upbringing because I kind of, using this idiom, I grew up on both sides of the tracks. It was pretty weird for me. So that probably fed my fascination with, let me see how people react when I'm home, and let me see how people react when I'm in the classroom at my private school. And that really led, that, speaking of which, that dictated my career path, because I just kept digging into that and trying to find ways where I could do that and just understand people and understand why we do the things we do. You know, I have this distinct memory of driving past affordable housing buildings, coming home from visiting family in Queens. And I remember this, I would look at the buildings and there would be like a bunch of lights on. And I would say to my parents, like, can you imagine everything that's happening in there? Like, and I would point to one window. I'd say somebody's crying. Somebody else is having the best day of their life. Somebody else is this, somebody else is that. And my mom always tells the story too, that I went through all the windows and told very colorful stories. And then I was kind of crestfallen. And I said, can you imagine if you were born there, do you have the same opportunities as everyone else? For the third time, I'm sure I didn't say it like that, but I said something to that effect. You know, I said, you're starting at a disadvantage. And so became my fascination with DE&I work, this idea of having a lack of access to resources. You know, asking my parents, does everyone go to private school? And they're like, certainly not. You barely can. So let's start there. You know, I'm the child of immigrants. So they really, you know, busted their tails trying to give me the proverbial better life. And it worked, but it also didn't, because I had to face a lot of racism and a lot of bias and a lot of feeling like the other. And that would happen if I went and visited family, you know, in a disadvantaged neighborhood where I'd be the other because I go to private school and I live in a house. And then I'd still be the other when I went to school and I was the black kid, quote unquote. So it was a confusing time, but you know, with lots of years of therapy, I've gotten through it and gotten to the other side. But it's been a fascinating work and really like given me a in-depth understanding of this feeling of other, you know.
What did you end up studying in college?
So psychology, undergrad.
Okay. All right. That's what I figured.
Yeah. And then for grad school, I found the way to overlap business and psychology. I discovered the wonderful field of organizational development. It used to be called industrial psychology. So did that in grad school. started working for the Y straight out of grad school and after having just become a mom. So I had my idealistic new mom glasses on. I wanted to work for an organization that helped build better societal support systems. I was really interested in working for an organization that did that and had a big presence in Black and Brown neighborhoods. So the Y was a perfect fit. And while there, I got to lead organizational development efforts for over 4,400 employees across the city. So it was a really great time and really rewarding finding ways to help employees feel valued for the selfless work they were doing in communities, because a lot, I think it's, don't quote me on this, it's been a while, but I think it's definitely over 50% of the Y's workforce is direct service staff.
Wow. Yeah, and your story reminds me of, when you're younger, I mean, similar to me, right? Like my parents, we moved to a city away from my extended family out of Los Angeles to a county right outside of Los Angeles for the school system. And it was great, but it's this irony. I don't know how to word it, but like getting a better education makes you more aware,
yes,
of the microaggressions that you get. Right? That, right. It's like almost like ignorance is bliss, you know?
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. And I didn't process that till much later in life. Right. Like I'm thankful my parents did that, but it was also difficult because I was, right, acutely aware of how we were different. And I would even notice microaggressions happening to my parents as, yes, a child,
right,
that my parents didn't know were happening to them.
Right.
You know?
Did they come to realize it later on as well?
I haven't asked them about it. There's just like key moments I remember as a kid, you know? Like when parents moved to a new house, for example, this is when I remember, and my dad doing the yard and asking them, hey, who lives here or who moved in? And it's like me and the neighbor directly asking them, like, how did you buy this house?
Classic.
And my dad just like didn't take that and like being proud and telling him about his job and how he did it. But I'm like, that's not normal, Dad, you know?
Right. I totally get it. We had a lot of those moments, and it's funny how that, there's certain ones that are just like classic microaggressions from that time, yeah, right? That's one of them. It's like, who lives here?
Right. That's
crowd favorite. Yes. I gotta love it.
But no, that's incredible. And I mean, kudos to you in your career and like focusing on creating more inclusive environments for really impactful organizations. One section of our listeners are people that are interested in D&I or want to, you know, start helping their organization with D&I. Like what advice would you give someone that's early on, maybe someone that's at an organization that wants to start something with D&I, or maybe someone that just got tasked with D&I? Like what are some tips that you would give for people early on in that stage?
That's the $1 million question if I've ever heard one.
it's a big one, I know.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of something I can say that isn't what, you know, you'll read and hear everywhere. And I think that what I can say that might be a little different is the way is made by walking. So try something. You cannot be afraid to fail in this space. As a matter of fact, I hate to break it to you, but you're going to fail. You're going to fail, and you cannot be scared to do that and pick it up, get those lessons you learned and try something else. I think one of the scariest, humbling and upsetting part, really, just to keep it real, is that this work it's not for the easily discouraged, and you're going to be discouraged. You're going to be frustrated. So I think often I will admit in my career, I get paralyzed by fear because I want to do the right thing and I want to do the thing that's going to work and have impact and change everything, change the world, make it all better. And so I get paralyzed by that because I'm like, wait, if I do this little mentorship program, that's only going to help a few people. I want to, dismantle systems of oppression. I don't want to help two people. And you know what that does? That makes you not do anything. So I think that's the advice I would give is the way is made by walking. Just start walking the path, trip, fail, start again. Do whatever you can in the here and now with what you have, which I appreciate is difficult. But do it, systems of oppression were designed to be intentionally convoluted, right? If it were easy, we would have solved all of these problems already. And there have been countless times where I feel like I've planned something really well and built the political support necessary. And when it comes time to implement or execute, it becomes so difficult. It becomes so unclear. I'll have somebody that agreed to do something say, oh, well, I didn't have that understanding from that meeting. And I have to stop myself from saying the meeting where you agreed to do the thing, you're saying that you didn't agree to do the thing. And those are the days where I'll be frustrated. I'll be really frustrated. I'll be angry. I'll be annoyed. And I have to remind myself, this is intentionally difficult. That's why it's so hard to dismantle. These systems were made literally to hold people back. So do I really think as a random person in the long history of this world that I just woke up one morning and I'm going to be the one that pulled the string that made everything better? Obviously I'm not. There's nothing special about me, in that regard. So I think keeping that in mind, it sounds pessimistic, but really it's optimistic because it's encourage you to give your space and encourages you, hopefully, or gives you the permission to give yourself the space to just try the thing, just try anything. It's better than not doing anything. And you will find often that as you try, whether you fail or succeed, other doors will open up and the path becomes clearer. And shameless commercial, that's one of the things I love about Related, that we're not scared to fail. Even with this work, my team is incredibly empowered to do some things. And if we don't get it right, we say, that sucks, sorry, and we try again. So I think that is an important piece of suggested advice to keep in mind and to, in however possible, in whatever ways possible, try not to get discouraged or try not to take the entire weight on your shoulders.
That's real. That you inspired me because I feel exactly how you do sometimes, right? I'll have moments of inspiration and I'm going and things are going well and something will happen where I'm just like, what am I doing? I just think about quitting or not doing this initiative or whatever. But I think about the story, right? Like for your example, the person that's been in your organization for 15 years, you might not be dismantling systems of oppression, but if you're getting one person to feel better at work, one person into the industry that wouldn't have been there otherwise, like it's those small steps. And just start. I think that's really great that's really great advice, because we're often paralyzed by how big of the task is of diversity and inclusion. And it's arguably one of the biggest ones we have in the US, right? But if there's not going to be any change if people like you don't start. So that's really great advice. I guess, you know, thinking about the future and moving forward, like what are you looking forward to at Related in 2023? Like, can you share with us some of the things you're most excited about for this year?
Yeah, I mean, so much. It's a new year always brings with it such inspiration to you know, do a bunch of stuff. I think probably the top one is doubling down on these inclusion efforts, you know, seeing that, okay, let's really continue to drive that to see if we can up our inclusion game. So that'll look like a variety of things. You know, a lot of them are still in the works, but, you know, ways that we can really lean into making people feel seen, heard, and valued, which can look like anything from additional employee development programs to, you know, something we've been doing recently is also just doubling down on our recognition of events that matter to employees, you know, whether it's Black History Month or Asian American Pacific Islander Month, you know, certainly small things. And I'm not suggesting that diversity, equity, and inclusion isn't a year-round commitment and the right thing to do, but it helps, right? Visibility, representation matters. So it helps to see things that matter to you celebrated, and certainly helps to build an inclusive environment. But there are many other large scale efforts that I hope will get at this inclusion process and building a more inclusive environment. And so whatever we can do to move that needle, I'm really looking forward to, you know, over the next couple of years.
That's exciting. Really enjoyed our conversation, and thank you so much for sharing like all these insights, wisdom that you have building D&I for such large organizations. If people want to follow you, like what's the best place to kind of to follow you and keep in touch on social?
Yeah, my LinkedIn. I'm very active on LinkedIn, so, you know, if anyone wants to chat or ask questions or just keep up with what we're doing, feel free to follow me on LinkedIn, Tanya Diaz Goldsmith. I think it's a pretty unique combination of names, so shouldn't have any trouble finding me. Feel free to reach out.
Awesome. Thanks again for joining, Tanya, and thank you everybody for listening.
Thank you so much, Mario. Really appreciate it.
Thanks to everyone listening in. To get more multicultural insights, check us out at thinknow.com and follow us on social media. You can also subscribe to this podcast on your favorite platform. Final thank you to our producer, Lucas Martinez, who created our intro music and makes our podcast sound great. To email him, reach out to martinez.lucas.a@gmail.com.